You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
What does VA mean to me?
A place for my daughter to call home. Thanks to the VA Home Loan.
A new lease on life. The best healthcare team I've ever had is here at VA.
And education and the opportunity to open doors I never thought possible with my GI Bill.
The financial support I need to manage the disabilities I develop because of my service.
Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to The Axe is Staying in Minneapolis Edition. As in the snowiest game I can remember in the long history now of Huntington Bank Stadium. The Snow Globe game, the John Nestor game, a 17-7 victory sees your Golden Gophers retain the Axe for the fourth time in 5 years. The first time that has happened to make each and every one of you listeners feel old on a Sunday in my entire lifetime. And joining us, as he has all Big Ten season, is my second cousin, former Golden Gopher offensive lineman Derek Burns. Derek, I wish I could tell people what I let off my conversation on my drive home to you with, but I have to be objective journalist, man. But how are you now 12 hours post-haste?
I'm doing well. It always feels good to beat a rival, and this game had kind of everything, you know. End of the year, weather situation, playing conditions, and a lot of fun, I think, for Gopher fans. So excited to get into it.
Yeah, I think this was a really, really fun game. I think what we have to probably start off with, though, is the Gophers are now 7-0 at home. We can talk about the 0-5 on the road. But part of the thing was the vibe in the stadium, right? So you've got the snow globe type effect. The students were out in full force. Once again, the students have been phenomenal all season. I mean, we'll talk about this probably more in the off season, but this is the foundation that helps to like solidify the fan base going forward, having students that are there in full force and loving it. And if you walk around the tailgate lots, we've talked about this a lot before, you're seeing a lot of kids. I feel good about the future of Gopher football in terms of fandom, especially as you know that the boomers are slowly going to be dying off, and they have been a big part of the Well, it's, I mean, those are just realities. I mean, it's going to happen to Gen X and millennials too, but I mean, they're the most likely to. But the boomers have been the mainstay of fans, but the vibe yesterday was just awesome. And, you know, people are going to trash the Gopher fan base for storming the field, you know, on a four win team. But the reality is, like, those people stood through effectively a snowstorm the entire time. They kept the energy up. They won a rivalry game, and then they also went 7-0 for the first time since 1930-ish, something like that, Ryan, at home.
Flex said that afterwards. I am pretty damn certain it's 1967.
Okay, sure, whatever.
Time the Gophers went undefeated at home. But yes, that hasn't happened in nearly 60 years.
But it's something that we've talked about at length before. Like, I'm not going to criticize fans for having fun, especially if they just watched an entire football game while it snowed on them in 23 degrees and they kept their energy up the whole time. If they want to party on the field, good for them.
Well, I mean, even the student section, which from you didn't know what the attendance was actually going to be for butts and seats. And as I walked back into the stadium from Oak Street, where Luke, I'll tell you, Spotify commenter Haley, who we've
referenced, did you meet her?
She came up and said hi with her significant other. So we love to see people from the comments from GI come up and say hi. But the student section, I will continue to die on the hill of, is the straw that stirs the drink in Huntington Bank Stadium. They were to capacity even on Thanksgiving break. Now, I know how much this means to that fan base, the students. Again, I went to the University of Minnesota. I'm well aware of the Venn diagram of crossover between Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Iowa, especially for a lot of these kids. And so I'm sure there was some red within the student section. It was tough to tell because everybody had 9 layers on. But I have absolutely zero problem storming the field if you stayed for the duration of that game. As Luke said, in conditions like I don't know that we'll ever see again at Huntington Bank Stadium, where yes, the coils were on, and yes, we got clarification from that from the university administration, but the way it was put to us was it's essentially there to do 2 things. The coils underneath the field, it's there to warm it up enough so that it helps prevent concussions and injuries, and it's not a skating rink out there. But also, you'll remember games like Purdue or the Dilly Bardan game against Ohio State. If it is snowing more than a half inch per hour, it's going to accumulate no matter what. Now, I'm not going to pretend to be, I think, Luke, your favorite meteorologist here locally is Ian Leonard. I think you even got a picture with him at the state fair. But again, I don't pretend to know how much it was snowing. I just know it was enough that between every media timeout, they had to bring the shovels out for the hashes and every 5-yard increment. I get it's a 4-win Wisconsin team. I get that this year didn't go the way that many folks wanted to long term. And we'll spend potentially the final few minutes of the podcast talking about the year that was. But look, you beat Wisconsin. You beat them for the 4th time in five years. Again, I was born in 1992. The last 5-year stretch before the one that we're in right now, where Minnesota won the Axe 4 out of 5 seasons, was 1986 to 1990. This team isn't perfect. This season wasn't perfect, but you were able to put an exclamation point on an outstanding home season.
All right, Derek, any thoughts just on the general vibe? I know you weren't able to be there either, but I mean, as I was able to consume the game in multiple formats, it was very clear that the fan base was the straw that was stirring the drink to bring up the vibe.
Yeah, things we've talked about before is creating memories. I mean, this is something that we'd all like to see an 11-1 season or a 12-0 season. And, you know, and I know that there's a portion of the fan base that, you know, it seems to be fixated on having another 2019. And we'd all love that. Short of that, however, these are the things that I think, you know, whether you were a student or just a regular fan at the game yesterday, 5-10 years from now, when you talk about Gopher game memories and being at a certain game or maybe traveling to an away game, this one I think will come up. People will talk about we beat Wisconsin at home and, you know, basically a blizzard and something very unique. And you could attend a lot of sporting events the rest of your life and not have duplicated this. So I think it's great. I'm glad that the fans were able to enjoy it. And as far as storming the field, I think we have to, as the newer generations come in, Luke, that you alluded to, we have to take this prior, whatever it is, barometer, measuring stick on, you know, when do you storm the field and how and what, just throw it away. This is something different. It's a new generation that people that want to have fun, and the atmosphere was conducive to something like that. And if you saw any posts on social media, Ryan, I think you posted a couple. of the post game celebration. I don't know how you could be against that or judge it. So great to see.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about when the Gophers were on offense. On the day, the Gophers score 17 points. They had 218 yards of total offense. Maybe more impressively, they were 7 of 14 on third down, and we'll get to that later. They had 128 yards on the ground, and they had, 90 yards through the air. I think it's notable to say that Darius Taylor had 19 carries and 100 yards. He had that long of 49. Drake Lindsey on the day, 18 for 24 for 90 yards. There were a number of drops in there. You know, conditions weren't ideal for throwing. But I wouldn't say it was by far his best game, but he did enough to put them in a position to win, whether that be throwing the ball, getting them into good run plays, etc. Femi Ijeboy had 7 carries for 25 yards. And then receiving-wise, Jamison Gears, 4 for 27, Lamaki Brockington, 2 for 24, Darius Taylor, interestingly, had only 4 for 11. But, you know, on the day, the offense did just enough to be able to get this team into a position where they could be victorious. It, you know, in some ways, I think, Ryan, offline we were joking that the first 1-20 was going to win. Well, nobody made it to 20 in these conditions. But, yeah, I mean, this is a game that, that, you know, it doesn't really matter how you win. It's just if you win. And so, Derek, what was Wisconsin trying to do to stop Minnesota's offense? And what did Minnesota do to, you know, find enough success to win?
Yeah, so Wisconsin played, as most opponents this year have, they played predominantly man coverage. They mixed in some zone. But I think the big key was they played with a lot of cushion. So they wanted to keep everything in front of them. And I think the television announcers touched on this, but with field conditions the way they were, it's hard for defensive secondary to close on the football. So playing with a cushion is a smart thing. And really, I thought Minnesota, I was impressed with the game plan, especially in the first half, because Minnesota was ready for that. So they really went quickly to a lot of short underneath passing routes. And, you know, that effectively became a lot of their running game was these, you know, 3, 4, 5 yard passes, because that's what Wisconsin was giving up. And, you know, as the game went on, I was expecting Minnesota to go to more of a double move strategy and get something down the field, because again, it's hard for secondary athletes to flip their hips and be able to make that adjustment. But being that Minnesota had the lead, I suppose none of us should be surprised that Minnesota was not that aggressive in the second half. So mainly, again, it became more of a ball control, dink and dunk, that sort of thing, which I think, you know, aligned with the conditions. And then, of course, mixing in as much run, you know, as they could, to, you know, and a mixture really of actually inside, outside zone, things like that. And so, yeah, that was, I think, what we saw schematically from Wisconsin and Minnesota.
Before I give my thoughts, Derek, I know the first thing that people want me to ask you is about the pride of Tracy, Minnesota, where Mr. Pork himself, by the way, what a great deal with Dinkytown Athletes. I don't know if you've ever heard of that organization, but to partner Tony Nelson, the Egg Kid himself, with Minnesota Pork, what a great job by whoever does that. Gets his first start of the year at right guard. Everybody wants to know, Derek, how did Tony Nelson do?
He did well, especially pass blocking. What I would say about Tony is he raises the floor. Now that might sound like a little bit of a backhanded compliment, but what I mean by that is I would just say all around a solid performance. I don't think Tony, he's not going to jump off the film in terms of athletically. He's not necessarily flying around or you know, raising eyebrows with some of those things, but a lot like Ashton Beers, the center, very fundamentally sound, doesn't make a lot of mistakes. And when I say raise the floor, he just didn't have a lot of big minus plays. So, you know, having a missed assignment, completely whiffing on a pass block, that sort of thing that ultimately ends up with a defensive lineman 3 to 4 yards in the backfield, which we've talked about, Ryan, has kind of been the bane of this offensive line. When they haven't played well, that's what you're seeing, is you're seeing the running back take the handoff and having to make the first broken tackle 3-4 yards in the backfield, or getting pressure on the quarterback. It wasn't perfectly clean. I mean, there was some pressure on Drake from time to time. But overall, you know, I thought Tony had a solid performance, especially Darius's touchdown run, the long explosive run. Really good combo block that was pointed out on television, too. So all around a solid job.
Yeah, even on that touchdown run, the hole between Tony Nelson and Dillard Ray at right tackle, you could drive my little Ford Ranger through to be able to get him to the second level. And as Luke pointed out, Jalen Smith, the Pride of Mankato West, deserves his flowers for being able to hold the block there to spring Darius, or even Pierce Walsh, who is lined up as the two-back guy in that formation, gets enough of the left edge player to spring Darius. But the thing I want to talk about with this offense is, look, we know this offense has warts, and they have plenty of them. But the one thing that I think is not being talked about enough, and I wrote about it after the game on Gopher Illustrated, where each and every one of you should become members. It's 75% off through Cyber Monday. Come hang out for the coaching carousel. Oh, by the way, National Signing Day is on Wednesday, because what is my life if not just Gopher football 200 or 365 days a year? You can come see all that type of coverage, including three new commitments this weekend. But the most under-talked about and under-appreciated part about the Gopher offense is their ability to take care of the football. And I don't think that gets talked about enough, because now that Big Ten play is complete, Luke, you care to guess who was number one in the Big Ten in the least amount of giveaways?
I guess I'm going to guess it was Minnesota if you're asking me the question.
Minnesota only had four giveaways in nine Big Ten games. That is best in the Big Ten. Ohio State had five. They were second best. Indiana had six. They were third best. But even here in the month of November, folks, the Gophers never gave away the football. And you can even remember back and say, well, Ryan, okay, they had four giveaways as an offense. Yeah, three of them came in Drake Lindsey's implosion in Kinnick Stadium. Like, essentially every other game, they did an outstanding job of protecting the football. Now, why does that matter? I mean, Minnesota was plus three yesterday. You don't win this type of game where you can't get any footing. It's just that you're trying to win in a phone booth if you're not taking care of the football. Now, I also don't want to steal his thunder, because I know his thoughts and how he agrees with me that as you look at Drake Lindsey's freshman season now coming to a close, 16 passing touchdowns, but only six interceptions. Derek, I know a lot of people are going to want to draw comparisons between Drake and, say, Adam Weber. And I would tell you, and I'm sure he's even listening right now, and Adam, if you are, peace and love to you, the pride of Moundsview. But I believe that freshman season for Weber, he had 19 picks. 19. Now, he threw for 24 touchdowns from what I remember. But to see him only have six picks, Drake Lindsey, the entire regular season, what a valuable trait to have, and that is underappreciated in a PJ Fleck offense, Derek.
Yeah, when you called out the lack of turnovers or protecting the football, that's the first thing that I went to is Drake. Not to take anything away from the rest of the offense, but his ability to, especially at a young age, be smart with the football. And, you know, a lot of times with quarterbacks, we're talking about growing pains. And, you know, do you remember early in his career when, you know, he threw several interceptions or made the same mistake in multiple games on the same type of route or whatever? And we just haven't seen that. And I've been a little bit guarded with my praise for Drake because a couple reasons. One, I don't want to set expectations so high that, you know, that it's unrealistic. But also, I don't want to go full on homer. But as long as we're going there, I would just tell you that when you add up his physical talents and now what we're talking about, which is the mental side of the game and his ability to read defenses, protect the football, the future is very, very bright for that young man, being the age he is and what he's able to accomplish. I think that other parts of the offense that struggled, and we talked about it plenty on the podcast this year, I think held them back a little bit, you know, some inconsistencies in the offensive line. And I think just frankly, some underperformance at the wide receiver position. We weren't able to see everything that he has to offer. He still played well, and there were certainly still games that we highlighted him, but for this point in his career, very impressive. And I think that the lack of turnovers and protection of the football is just another piece of evidence towards that.
All right.
Any thoughts, Luke?
No, I mean, just on Drake Lindsay, I think if you're a ball guy, as they say, right, you really appreciate what he's doing at the line of scrimmage. And that is not always called out, by your color commentators, your play-by-play folks on television, definitely not probably even in the radio. But if you're counting boxes and, you're trying to see what kind of coverage they're in, you can appreciate what Drake Lindsay has done. You see all the arm talent, and it was evident from literally the first completion of the season where he threw a long out to Coy Parrish, right? And you're just like, whoa, not many guys make that throw with that kind of ease. But to see the compliments of the mental side of the game, which Derek pointed out, it's really a joy to be able to watch. And then just to add on the fact that he was able to protect the ball. You look back at that Iowa game, Ryan, to your point, you really wonder, maybe what could have been had he not had the struggle, the typical freshman struggle in that game. I'm not suggesting that they would have found an easy way to win the game, but I am suggesting like it would have been maybe a more interesting game. But that is what it is at the end of the day, and Iowa deserves credit there. In this game, though, the thing that you really like from Drake Lindsay was the no turnovers, where it's very easy to turn the ball over in those kinds of
conditions. Just ask the Wisconsin quarterbacks,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, exactly. But even just like, it didn't bobble a snap, those sorts of things, those kinds of exchanges can be much more difficult here, or where you just literally slip in some weird kind of way and take an extra sack. He was able to keep his feet. I do think we should transition. Do you guys want to talk more about the passing game in general? I don't know. I
mean, it was just so close to the line of scrimmage, and I know Derek was surprised like I was that they didn't go to like a stop and go at any point really. But
I would argue that
a lot of that just kind of has to do with the mindset of the head coach, who also punted from Wisconsin territory four different times.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I disagree with a lot of those choices, knowing the game situation. But it's, even the lone touchdown, for as much time as we're going to spend on the refereeing crew on that Wisconsin touchdown, which I still think is an absolutely ludicrous take to have, especially from what they told the Big Ten, then told our pool reporter, Andy Greeter of the Pioneer Press, what their rationale was and overturning that in terms of an illegal touching versus not illegal touching. This is a long-winded way to say, if you look at how Minnesota's only passing touchdown went, where they go trips to the field, Jamison Gears crosses the face of the Mike linebacker and then gets vertical. Well, there is a Will linebacker there who tries to get depth, but he runs into the official there in the center of the field. And so Drake does put it in a great spot. And just like every catch I'll ever remember from Jamison Gears, it has to be a jump ball and it has to be a complicated catch, because all Jamison Gears does for his entire Gopher career is catch tough touchdowns. But you even see the linebacker then, who I think was the freshman Mason Poza, look back at the center judge and kind of just go, throws his hands up in the air. Like, they needed that in a game where I think I tweeted it out, and tell me if you disagree, Luke. Every point felt like double what it would normally feel like.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, field goals were 6 points almost, and then touchdowns. I mean, touchdowns were worth 14 in a game like that. So they had screwed it up earlier where they weren't able to. They had a Denneberg had a field goal blocked, and then off another Nestor, I think it was the first Nestor interception, Drake just whiffs on a wide open. Wide open Lemecki Brockington, where if he hits him in stride, I think he may have scored. If not, he's down with inside the five, and instead Minnesota has to attempt the field goal there. So it's I just even think for the people who are like, well, Ryan, they only put up 218 yards. We have to, on the things that we normally evaluate an offense on, because of what Mother Nature threw at these teams yesterday, I think you almost have to truly throw it out the window.
Well, that and the fact that the Gophers were leading, Ryan, I think that also.
Yes. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
What a novel concept, by the way, Luke. For the first time, essentially since, golly, I don't even know, Northwestern State, the Gophers were consistently leading in the game, because you think about Purdue, you think about Rutgers, even think about Michigan State almost. They were losing for large chunks of those games. So when they actually did get a lead and the conditions were what they were, you know what Phil Tressel. I mean, you can call him Phil Tressel on his 45th birthday yesterday. But you knew what the head coach was going to do, and he was going to be Mr. Conservative.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely a few drops, or, you know, even Malachi Coleman's catches, like, whoa, you really got to make the effort. And not so much that it was a bad throw, but the timing is just hard in these kinds of conditions. You saw Wisconsin get into a situation, we'll talk about this on defense, where they kind of had to throw. And that's honestly their best approach against this Minnesota defense. But, you know, for the Gopher offense, you know, they didn't necessarily need to throw, and they didn't. They didn't execute, though, in some situations. You know, a couple drops by Javon Tracy, and then, you know, misses on like Lamecki Brockington. Ironically, I thought that Drake Lindsey's best throw of the day was a screen that they threw, I think, to the Wisconsin sideline, where it was all kind of messed up, but he put enough arc on it to throw it over the top to him. That was maybe his best ball, one he probably shouldn't have thrown. But I digress. Let's talk a little bit about when the Gophers were running the ball. Darius Taylor eclipsed the 100 yard mark, which was awesome. You saw, you know, a couple of kind of explosive runs from Femi Ajiboye. Nothing that would be classified as an explosive run, but was able to make, you know, something out of nothing. Derek, what did you see in the running game that found the Gophers to have enough success?
Well, this had been a really stout Wisconsin run defense, really against anybody. So the fact that Minnesota was able to, if you take away the one long touchdown, certainly wasn't a flashy day for the Gopher running game. But the fact they were able to consistently, and I think you pointed out, Luke, convert a number of third downs too, I would classify it as just enough. So Minnesota went to a lot of a combo blocking scheme, so a little bit less in space that they had done the last few games, which, again, given the weather and the field conditions, kind of made sense. The past couple games, we had talked about Minnesota having some success in an outside zone, running, getting the offensive line to run east and west and stretching out the defense and having Minnesota ball carrier pick their holes. This really wasn't the conditions for that type of running game. So you saw much more of the combo blocking, you know, really shore up the defensive line, make sure that you're not getting penetration, and then just let the running back be able to make the cuts. And again, same thing we talked about with the secondary. The defense isn't able to adjust and turn and make those type of closing tackles that they need to. So you saw a number of times the running back sort of hit the line of scrimmage, not much there, but then bounce outside. And that's something in these field conditions that you can have success with, because the linebackers aren't able to turn and close the way they normally are and chase that down. So again, Minnesota, I thought, did what they needed to, and the running game wasn't flashy. The stats confirm that. But against a Wisconsin defense that was, that was really stout all year, I thought it was impressive. Last thing I would say, maybe the nicest play call of the whole game was when they needed to salt it away in the fourth quarter. They went to the Javon Tracy jet sweep, where
all right,
everybody
in Wisconsin keeps stealing my thunder. All right.
So, well, I mean, this was again one of those they needed to milk the clock. If they can get a first down, the game's over. Everybody expects them to run between the tackles, you know, including Wisconsin. And so a really nice change up, curveball, slider, whatever baseball analogy you want to use. So, again, just an overall solid game of running the ball.
I thought Wisconsin's front seven was as advertised. Does anybody say against that?
I thought they were. The one thing I will say is I thought that the linebackers, you know, on a neutral field that wasn't, I would have liked to see them on a neutral field that wasn't this playing surface. They struggled when things kind of would get behind them. But yes, yep. In the run game, they were very good. But I can see why they struggle in the pass game, much like the Gophers, yeah, right?
Secondary ain't much to write home.
Yeah, well,
I thought the front seven. And it helped that the conditions were able to neutralize Peterson and Rager and
yeah.
Pouza.
Yeah,
the way that they were. But I also think for a running game that we've spent the entire season lamenting, lambasting, look, sweet giblets and junipers, everyone, we've spent a lot of time telling you how bad it's been. But this had been the second best run defense in the Big Ten. And some of it was field condition related terrorism, sure. But they ran it for 4.3 yards per carry for 132 yards. That doesn't sound great, but if you know the context of coming into that game in the month of November, Wisconsin had been giving up, I think, 2.7 yards per carry, plus around 76 rushing yards per game. When they needed to make plays, they made plays, including the 49-yard run, including the Javon Tracy one where Pierce Walsh, and I think it was Lamecki Brockington to the Gopher sideline with some excellent open field blocks. Look, we will spend the next 9 months now telling you, just like we did the last three, that Greg Harbaugh has got to figure out a way to run the football next year. And some of that's him. Some of that's the offensive line that, Lord knows, they, as Derek said, I think a couple weeks ago, the least physical offensive line he's watched in some time. Some of that is related to the running back room where they didn't know who is playing and who could break a tackle, who could do much of anything. But we could spend the next 9 months doing that. Just know that they ran the ball enough and effectively enough to win a football game.
All right. So should we talk about? No, we need to jump and do our break. Then we'll come back and talk when the Gophers are on defense, and then special teams as well. And we'll close out this final regular season episode for the season. Ryan, once again, we need to talk about our partners at Blue Horizon Energy. And we talked about previously that, honestly, energy prices are just growing rapidly. They're growing faster than the rate of inflation. If you look at their projections going into 2030, that the increase could be anywhere between 28 and 46%. It could be between 15, almost 16 cents to 18 cents. That's more than triple the cost in 2003. Ryan, the only way that you could get ahead of this if you're a grower or a business operator is to invest in renewable energies like solar array panels, like what Blue Horizon Energy installs.
Look, I know we have a lot of listeners on this podcast, and we love each and every one of you, but we know there's plenty of you in the ag community or in the commercial businesses. And energy, as Luke said, is only going up. So where can people go if they're trying to find a way to lower their cost, Luke?
If you want to learn more about ways to be able to save on those rising energy costs, go to bluehorizonenergy.com/gridiron, fill out the form, and they will get in touch with you. Again, that is bluehorizonenergy.com/gridiron. Ryan, I don't know if you noticed, but all of a sudden it's already November, and you know what that time is. It's open enrollment time. So while you're thinking about life insurance, or I shouldn't say life insurance, health insurance, looking at maybe making a change there, you know, this is a good time to also think about your auto, home, life, all maybe your ATV insurance, boat insurance, and the Burns Insurance Agency can help you shop during that open enrollment period.
I mean, absolutely. And that's where the independent insurance agent himself, that is the Burns Insurance Agency, located in lovely downtown Oakdale, Minnesota. For myself as a client, I've talked about this story before, but we had a hailstorm come through here in Roseville. And initially when the adjuster came out, he told me to go shove it, that there wasn't enough damage. Well, guess what? My insurance agent came out with our own roofing people, took the quality photos, said, nah, we're not going to shove it. And I got a brand new roof out of it for only my deductible. And it's because my insurance agent puts in the extra effort. You're not just a number on a spreadsheet. Or even, I love to tell the story last year of Austin coming up to me on Oak Street before the Gopher game and saying, hey, he and Tina, they saved you $700. Appreciate it. Well, he found me here just a few weeks ago. Guess what? They switched him to a different insurance here in 2025, saved him $1,000 on his home and auto. That is the beauty of an independent insurance agent. They're not loyal to anyone except their client, which is you. So if you want to give them a shout today, shoot them an email, bill@insurancebyburns.com, or check them out online, insurancebyburns, all one word, .com.
Hey, if you have tickets to a Gopher event and you aren't able to make it, because let's be honest, this is a very busy time of year. The holidays are around. We've got lots of activities for kids or what have you, family gatherings, etc. Maybe you can't make a Gopher game. And hey, maybe you want to support Dinkytown athletes. Please check out eVenture. eVenture is going to help you find people to take those tickets. They're going to take that burden off of you, and we're going to move those tickets as quickly as we can. So eVenture is going to give a portion of the proceeds to Dinkytown athletes. And frankly, the most important thing is that those tickets should be used, and they will be used by Gopher fans because they'll be supporting Dinkytown athletes. So if you have tickets available, please consider donating them. Go to eventshure.com and share tickets or instructions there. Or if you're looking for some tickets for an upcoming event, we do have a limited inventory right now. Please check that out. Again, eventshure.com. All right, the Gophers give up 7 points on the day. Some will argue they really only had kind of two plays that killed them, and that's all fair. But on the day, Wisconsin had 268 yards of total offense, 182 through the air, and 86 on the ground. They were 4 of 13 on third down and 2 of 3 on fourth down. They had, obviously, the three notable turnovers, two by John Nestor, and I think Nestor also recovered the fumble that hit the motion man. They possessed the ball 29 minutes, so they probably accomplished pretty much what they wanted in terms of managing the ball. But at the end of the day, this Gopher defense definitely did enough. And I do, you know, this wasn't a great offense to begin with, but I do think that the field conditions didn't help them any when they went to try and throw the ball, even though they did find some success there. But Derek, what did the Gophers do to try to neutralize this Wisconsin offense?
Yeah, so the theme from this game where maybe the Gophers improved was their pass coverage. I mean, that had been the bane of their existence. We'd spent a lot of time this year talking about their inability to play zone and then even man coverage being really hit or miss. And so mostly man coverage this game, but the Gophers did go to more zone scheme in the second half. They also ran predominantly zone on third downs. And I don't want this to sound like a dig at the Gophers defense, but if you ask why they did better in this game covering, I mean, two of the three reasons I think are Wisconsin related. Number one is the conditions did, you know, were helped them out, were favorable. It was tough to throw the football in these conditions. And we didn't talk about this too, but a lot of times in games like this that are snowy, it's actually the wind that has a lot of effect on the game. The field surface, of course, gets talked about a lot, but when that wind is swirling and blowing, that affects the ability to throw the ball. So I think that was a factor. The second thing was, I have to call it like I see it, Wisconsin's just not very good throwing the ball. They're just not.
Their offense just stinks.
Yeah. And so again, does that mean the Gophers defense was bad? No. I think the third reason of three is the Gophers did play better and they covered better than they had. And they made a change, which Ryan will talk about in the secondary, that I think was interesting, that worked out and kind of leaves us saying, is that going to be a change for the future? Who knows? But so I think those three things add up. And then if I can add one more, just Luke, you alluded to it earlier, the game script. I think if I'm going to search in the bag of not excuses, but reasons why the Gopher defense wasn't better this year, the game script was just never in their favor. Defenses pile up statistical wins when you have a lead, particularly in the second half, and you force the opposing offense to be one-dimensional. That's when you get your sacks. That's when you get your turnovers. That's when you get interceptions, because you're forcing the offense to do, to be predictable and do things that they don't want to do. They were just never, as Ryan pointed out, they're never in that situation the whole year. It was like we never had a lead. It was either we were down or it was back and forth. So yeah, schematically, nothing, no huge changes. I can talk about a scheme change on Nestor's second interception that I thought was a good play call. But just overall, I think, the conditions, the opponent added into the fact. And I did think Minnesota defense played a little better.
We are on the Sabbath, and we're going to get a little weird here with it, and Luke's going to yell at me offline, but WWJD, what would John do? And that would be, what would John Nestor do? He would lead the team in tackles. He'd have three takeaways by himself with two interceptions and a fumble recovery. Plus, he had two tackles for loss and was arguably probably the best open field tackling game of the season that I can remember for a Gopher corner. I mean, you look at the PFF stuff, I think he was the number one graded player in run defense, tackling, and coverage. Oh, is that it? I mean, John Nestor was incredible. And it's interesting for the Iowa transfer to then come into the Minnesota-Wisconsin rivalry and have an impact the way that he did. But I also want to ask you guys this. Is when the freshman quarterback, Carter Smith, elected to have the ball snapped into the motion man, what do you think the collective sigh of relief was for Danny Collins, Minnesota's defensive coordinator, knowing they have had one takeaway in the last five games, and then you saw the ineptitude of the Wisconsin offense that all Badger fans saw all year, and for them to then have it hit the left hip of the motion man, three different Gophers and three different Badgers are trying to get it underneath the scrum, and then John Nestor is about the fourth man to come in and he gets it. How big of a sigh do you think Collins had up in the press box knowing we finally got a bleeping takeaway?
It was probably audible up in the booth where he was not sitting.
Yes. Derek?
Yeah, it was amazing to watch the opposing offense just make an unforced error like that bounces into the lap of the Gopher defense, which was much needed. Interestingly, if any fans had a chance to watch the Illinois Northwestern game later in the evening, which was also a snowy condition game, that play summed up what the entire Illinois Northwestern game looked like. There were at least five or six plays that looked like that, where the balls, I mean, it looked like a football blooper highlight reel with the balls bouncing around and changes possessions four different times as different players fall on the ball and then it squirts out and somebody else jumps on it. So yeah, that was, I had to imagine the shoulders were released energy from the shoulders and a big sigh of relief on the defensive coach's standpoint.
Or you look at the second takeaway for the Gopher defense. Maverick Baranowski just drops perfectly into where he needs to be. His eyes are on Hunter Simmons, where actually, let me pose this to you before we get into that second turnover, Derek, is what did you think of Wisconsin's decision to essentially bench the freshman quarterback at halftime and say, we're going to go with the Southern Illinois transfer, Hunter Simmons, who's probably the better passer between the two, but certainly gives them not a ton with his legs.
Actually, that's a good call out because Wisconsin's plan in this game in the first half, and it became really evident, was they knew Minnesota was going to run predominantly man coverage and they wanted to isolate the quarterback on runs. So one of the weaknesses of running man coverage is you get those receivers out in a route and you spread the defense out, and that gives room for the quarterback to run and pick up first downs and, you know, extend plays, etc. And it didn't work. I mean, to the credit of Minnesota, they were able to contain that. Their number of quarterback runs, and I think when the Wisconsin coaching staff saw that, hey, plan A is cooked, we got to move to something else, I think that was it. And also this game script being down. And, you know, let's not forget, Wisconsin really, apart from that call, which we'll get to, that on fourth down that got them 7 points, they really were effectively shut out in the first half. So I think that was, those things contributed to the Wisconsin staff saying, we got to shift gears in second half. We're going to have to throw the ball whether we like it or not.
So that's where I think I got to give the Gopher defense their due, is on that first drive of the second half where Wisconsin gets the touchdown late. Very controversial. Trust me, we'll get into it. The Gopher defense is the one that gets the takeaway on the first drive to not allow momentum to spill over, where it's Baranowski who gets his eyes on the quarterback, deflects the pass right into the chest of John Nestor to force the takeaway. And then, Derek, I want to give you the floor for the third takeaway, John Nestor's second, that he returns 60-plus yards. Anthony Smith gets the pressure, but why is it that Hunter Simmons actually threw that football?
Yeah, really good play call from Danny Collins. And again, with the previous games and how the season rolled out, we haven't been able to say that a lot of times, that the defense pulls a great play call out of the hat at the right time. And the reason I say that is on previous possessions, Minnesota had gone with zone coverage on third down, I think on, if not every, almost every third down. So this is something that you can believe the Wisconsin offensive coaches had charted. They knew that, hey, we get to third down, Minnesota's going to drop into zone. So they call a zone-busting play that stretches the shell of the defense and gets that wide receiver running across underneath. That was a zone-busting play. And initially it looked like zone, but Minnesota threw the changeup on that play. Danny calls man coverage. John Nestor follows his receiver on the hip, and the quarterback never sees it. Now, he did get some pressure too, but he's assuming it's zone. He floats the ball out there not knowing that John's right on the hip, and he breaks on the ball, steps in front of it. So as nice of a play as that was on John's part, a really, really good play call at the right time.
The other thing I want to discuss with you gentlemen is a hill I'm prepared to die on after he played his first game at corner in his collegiate career. But Aiden Goosby had played, and I looked into this after the game, 961 total snaps, defensive snaps at the University of Minnesota, and all but two of them had come at safety or slot. Yesterday, Danny Collins makes the decision to, I'm going to play Aiden Goosby essentially every snap outside corner, and I thought he looked pretty damn good. And the ironic part is not lost on me that on the fourth down play, that was the only play that he had at safety. That was an evisceration. That was the most vicious legal hit, and that was legal. I want to hear nothing about it from them folks in Madison. I got enough family members now that I hear about it, all right? But my goodness, Aiden Goosby with an absolute smack on that fourth down where he could have probably picked it off, but I think the tone was going to be set to Wisconsin to end the game of, you know who little brother is. So what did, Derek, I'll pose it to you. What'd you think of Aiden Goosby, a corner experiment, and are you with me now of I'm all in on keeping him there for the bowl game? And I'm all in on potentially experimenting with that quite a bit here in the offseason.
Yeah, well, the first thing is, being that he's a safety, he knows the coverages and is able to read routes with his experience. Doesn't matter where he's playing. So the fact, first of all, he's not going to make a lot of mental mistakes, whether it's at corner or safety. And that happens to be his MO too, which is he's the guy that's just very, very good at his reads and diagnosis. So that checks out. And then I would say his job playing corner, he did play very soft. He kept everything in front of him. He wasn't jumping routes, so he wasn't necessarily making splash plays, but he did a really good job. I think maybe as we for a future podcast, maybe reflecting on the season, what have you, maybe after the bowl game, a couple of the questions we'll probably be asking is, should Tony Nelson have played more earlier, and maybe should Aiden Goosby have been playing corner earlier? And I can tell you, if you know the mind of a college coach, stubbornness is probably a little bit unfair, but they want a coach. They want to be able to believe that, hey, you know, I got the guys in the position I want. If I can just get this athlete to do X, Y, or Z, if I can coach him up, that's the nature of a coach. They don't often go to, I'm going to tinker with the lineup, I'm going to move this guy here. And really with the struggles they had at corner, not just, you know, in execution, but also injury-wise, I do think it's something they probably should have been, you know, messing around with, experimenting, what have you, earlier in the season. Because I think, you know, I look at this, and maybe you don't, Ryan, but I look at this and say, why didn't they do this halfway through the season? We could have maybe had some more success at corner, which was the place that kept the defense from executing better than they did.
I think some of it is also, if we're going to be truly honest about it, I think some of it's pride related, where stubbornness comes into it and you don't like to admit you're wrong. I mean, these coaches are human beings like the rest of us. Lord knows I've had some horrific takes on this podcast, and I don't know how long we've been doing it. And I always say it, it is so funny to me how many of you come up to me and remind me of Hank Epke. I even had somebody do it yesterday. I'm thinking to myself, Hank's got to be like 30 now. And he's got to be like, I wonder if people like still remember me. It's like, yeah. Like, but if you make a bad decision or a decision that you should have made sooner, now hindsight analysis is always 20/20. I'm Media Jack. I'll be the first one to tell you that. But not going to Tony Nelson or whoever at right guard sooner, not moving Aiden Goosby sooner, I think, Derek, that is an elite point. I think that's going to be one of the things we potentially him and Haw about in the month of December. But again, you kept the Wisconsin team to 7 points, which I still don't even agree with, which let's get into that, Luke, because I know I've got that stuck in my craw where.
Yeah. So this is the fourth down play, you know, the illegal touching. Well, so we probably need to go back. The play actually on the field is called incomplete, right?
Which I think is a huge part of this that I still do not understand. But yeah. Continue.
Yeah, so the play is called incomplete. To give the quarterback credit, I think it was
Carter Smith. It was a great ball.
Yeah, and it's about the only place he can throw it. Maverick Baranowski, I think, plays it pretty well as well. And you know, pushed the guy to the sideline. I'm not saying that he physically pushed him. He ran under his own volition. And then there along the sideline there, it appears that he might have stepped out. It's hard to say definitively just with the snow. It would have been much easier without the snow. And then ultimately the ball is thrown. He's able to look like he maybe gets his feet down. It's called incomplete, so that's important. And then ultimately they decide to review it. Upon review, they say he got his feet inbounds. Ryan, you're going to talk about how the pool reporter said that they did consider the fact that there was that he was forced out and then reestablished himself. So it wouldn't be illegal touching. I guess the point to me is there's this rule, or there's this word in kind of the rule book that says indisputable evidence, right?
Oh.
And we had someone tweet at us, you know, indisputable in quotes, because I think I've complained about indisputable before. Yeah, in the end, I was a little surprised, just given the nature of what we've seen mostly in college football. Usually what's called on the field is going to get deference. And in this specific case, I'm not sure that it did, because I'm not sure that you could argue that there is indisputable evidence to overturn what was called on the field. Ultimately, it didn't matter, and that was great. But it was unique, Ryan.
that's one way to put it. I'll say a few things for the armchair defensive coordinators who are going to be, well, Ryan, if Maverick Baranowski just turns his head and slaps it away like he should have, well, yeah, no kidding. Thanks, Grandpa. I'm aware I was watching it the same as you, but the point of this is, as Luke said, calling the field was that it was incomplete. And I also think the point of replay, and I've heard Dean Blandino and name your favorite referee analysis guy on TV say the point of replay is to essentially get it right if it's obvious. This was not obvious. Truly, it wasn't. Again, we're talking about Jackson Aker, who makes an outstanding catch. And I'm not disputing that he did get one of his, or if not two, of his feet in bounds. The thing is, he stepped out. I mean, he stepped out. You can see the tip of his left cleat, which is red, on the white if you follow it back. And here's the thing that that effing bugs me, is the question was posed, and I was talking with Andy about how to even pose it to the Big Ten spokesperson about the illegal touching here. Here's what they said, and quote, the question was whether illegal touching was part of the review process on the Badgers' first half touchdown. And the quote was, quote, yes, they did. It was determined the receiver reestablished after the force out from Maverick Baranowski. the force out. Are you kidding me? Now, if you watch that play, Maverick's hands look like Mr. Mime for you Pokemon guys, where they are right there. If we're saying he forced him out there in a rivalry game, in a physical game, and that's what you're saying was force out, which, my goodness, what are we saying here? Also, to say then he reestablished in the 4 milliseconds before he got both toes back in, like, stop it. Just absolutely stop it. And, like, that's the biggest part about this is, number one, it's illegal touching. Okay. I'm dying on the hill. Whatever. Call me the Gopher Rube, all of you Madisonites, whatever. Like, the point of replay to me is you could do it on every play and you could probably adjust the ball spot or what is a catch. I'm still unaware. But it's to get the things and overturn the things that are clear and obvious. Because of the field conditions yesterday, because of, I'm still unclear if he actually possessed the ball because it was kind of still moving. Like, this thing was not clear and obvious to overturn. And on fourth down in a huge spot, they thought they had enough evidence to do so is completely asinine to me. Completely. And that's where I also wrote after the game. This is a perfect instance that I hope the Big Ten, as Philip John Fleck would say, learns and grows from. Because you know what I wish we had, like the ACC has now?
Oh, the commentary?
If you have watched an ACC football game where they go to review, they will show the TV audience, number one, the replay center, and then they will actually loop in the TV broadcast of the conversation happening between the officials, in this case would have been Huntington Bank Stadium, and in the Big Ten offices of what they're actually talking about. Because in this instance, transparency is so crucial. For everybody, for me, the media jackal, for you, the fan, for the everybody. But to have that, to overturn that play, like, get the F out of here. Like, honest to goodness, that one is going to bug me for a while. It's not going to end up mattering. Yes, Baranowski should have batted it away. But clear and obvious things should be overturned. That was the opposite. And I just, all right, I feel better. But, Luke, it's just, I still can't kind of believe it. Again, especially when you have the Big Ten then come back and say it was determined that the receiver reestablished after the force out. The force out? Are you kidding me that Baranowski is allegedly moving him out of bounds, which is why his momentum went that way? Stop it.
All right.
Absolutely stop it.
I'm glad we got you on that soapbox. Ultimately, it didn't matter. The unique thing to me was I'm not sure anybody got a better view than the official that was right there. But in the end, difficult conditions, et cetera. I do like the idea of piping in the audio and adding transparency like they do in the ACC. I like that, Ryan. That is a good addition.
Again, we're a solutions-based podcast, and I'm trying to offer some help free of charge and not even give them a consulting fee here. Like, again, Wisconsin's offense stinks. I told you they stunk coming into the way, and I'm not saying that you disagreed with me, Luke, and I know that Derek doesn't either, but you kept a bad offense bad for most of the game. The only explosive play you give up is Jayonte McMillan thinking it's going to be a jailbreak screen, gets his eyes in the wrong spot.
Yeah.
It's a perfectly placed ball. Coy Parrish eats a stiff arm. Like, you gave up one explosive, and you gave up 7 points.
The irony of that play is you thought for a second there, because they were running out of time, that they might not even get the play off, and then they got that long. They got that long completion. People,
again, I didn't rewatch it that way. Said the play clock went all the way down to zero, which maybe it did. Again, I
think they got it off. Like, you get the tick at zero. Like, I think they got it off, but I thought when they broke the huddle, I was like, oh, there's a good chance they might not get this off. So
the other thing I want to note here isn't even about the Gopher defense. It's about the Wisconsin offense. Guys, I was mauling in the press box for Madison fans when Wisconsin took possession in the fourth quarter and then was running it like it was 0-0 in the first quarter.
Yeah.
Like, the clock was ticking and they are huddling up. They're going all the way underneath 5 seconds for everything. I kept turning to Daniel House and Dan Owen being like, are they aware they're down 10 points with like 6 minutes left and they're getting 4-yard chunks at a time? I mean, if I'm a Wisconsin fan, I am irate with Jeff Grimes, the offensive coordinator, and Luke Fickell for that clock management, because my goodness.
I you know, the thing that I was thinking in real time, and maybe they mentioned this on the broadcast, was that, you know, they've been through so many quarterbacks at this juncture. Who knows how many got reps this week? Like, obviously the starter probably got the most reps, the Carter Smith, but you know, at that point, Hunter Simmons is in. Maybe he didn't get reps in the 2-minute drill. I'm really not sure. Yeah, Derek, what would you think in that situation? That's the only conclusion I could come to.
Yeah, I mean, what I can fall back on is, had they even gone more tempo and been more wide open, I don't know if they would have had the tools and the offense to execute on that. But it was as head scratching to me, Ryan, as it was to you. And I had a couple of people texting me during, Minnesota fans texting me during that time, the same thing. They were saying, what's going on? Like, it's this multiple score deficit, and Wisconsin is running the possession like they're up three, you know, like there's just, it was head scratching and not a good look for the Wisconsin coaching staff.
Now, I do want to say, we spent a lot of time talking about, again, the portal misses, and John Nestor finally has a huge game in a big spot. The other transfer guy that had a big game that was a huge part of this game. Again, we talk about Minnesota being plus three. The other part of this game, why they won, is field position, where the Gophers won field position by 22 yards on average, where the average Gopher starting drive was at their own 44. The average starting Badger drive was at the 22. And yes, some of that is related to John Nestor's takeaways. I get that. But if you're going to punt four times from opponent territory, which, again, I don't disagree with the theory, especially with how bad Wisconsin's offense is. Tom Weston pinned Wisconsin within the 11-yard line three different times on five punts, whereas Sean West was pretty bad for Wisconsin with his four punts. Again, they switched punters. It was so bad. They had five punts on average for 29 average with only two inside the 20. Tom Weston is far from perfect. But Tom Weston, when they needed him to pin Wisconsin deep yesterday, gentlemen, he was able to do so. And if I'm not going to speak out of both sides of my mouth, I got to give some flowers to the young man.
Yeah, I think that's worth pointing out. And to your point, when you're in those situations, the thing you just can't have is a touchback, and he didn't have it, right? So you weren't giving up those yards that way. Very, very good call out. Just ball security in general. Coy Parrish made me very nervous on the punt return where he squirmed up and grabbed it. Ultimately, he did.
He was then potentially subsequently replaced by Quentin Redding in his final home game.
Yeah, I found that interesting. And then I also, like, no shade to Quentin Redding, but there's just a confidence that Coy Parrish has that I appreciate of going to try and catch the ball most of the time. We went back to Quentin Redding, and then, you know, every ball hit the turf. And maybe that was just the strategy going forward, but that was something that always frustrated me with him in that situation. I don't know that I agree with the benching, because more often than not, Parrish has been right. I know he had one flub this year on a kickoff or something. But ultimately that was the difference. I'm pretty confident that the field goal was blocked, Derek.
It was. I forget the big, tall, white defensive lineman.
Okay.
Got a fingertip on it from 38 there, which is why it's squibbed. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was fairly confident that was blocked.
First to tell you, I thought this was going to be, oh boy, here we go again. But then Jennifer's able to sneak one in the left upright from 33, which, he's had a hell of a 2 weeks. Him to have something go right, I'm here to tell you, I feel good for him as a human being.
I'll tell you, when the first one was missed, I actually thought to myself, like, boy, that was just a function of the conditions and, you know, the way he misses. Like, that was just a really bad miss. So good, I guess, that it was blocked, but also not good that it was blocked. It's tough conditions to kick in general, I'll say, at least from a field goal kicker. One, if you saw how running backs were struggling to, like, pivot and, you know, make cuts and those sorts of things, imagine having to plant your foot and having to keep it stay and have it stay in place. Pretty decent day from Denenberg, all things considered, I guess. The block obviously wasn't ideal, but you didn't miss an extra point. You then nailed the other field goal. So, all in all, special teams ultimately just didn't hurt them. and to your point, I'm glad you called out the Wisconsin punting because that was not great. I didn't notice that they switched punters, but yeah, he shanked a couple, and that was big for the Gophers. Any other special team thoughts?
No, I do want to get into some perspective here, unless you guys have anything else you want to add about Liggs units.
No, we can talk perspective.
So I wrote about it afterwards on Gopher Illustrated, where we are the three people that have told you all season this thing ain't been perfect. I mean, my goodness, has it been far from. But not only does the axe stay in Dinky Town, but you hit the over on the preseason Vegas over under, which was at 6.5. You're at 7-5. Okay. You also end above 500 in conference play for the fourth time in five seasons. Luke, I told this stat to Derek last night, so I'm not going to let him do the teacher's homework here. But do you want to guess when the last time was that Gopher football finished above 500 in the Big Ten in 4 out of 5 seasons previous to this stretch we are currently living in?
I'll go in the 40s. 45.
None of us were alive at the time. It was 1965 to 1969 right, when Murray Warmath was the coach. So that was 55, 56 years ago. A little bit of perspective there. You also look at the Gophers going undefeated for the first time at home since 1967, 58 years ago. But to me, I think this thing comes down to that first thing, the first thing I said there, which is they finish above 500 in the Big Ten. And I know there's a section of the fan base, and I don't know whether it's hardcore fans or whether it's casuals or what percentage of both it is, where it feels like there's this adoption of the idea where now it's playoff or bust. And this season was never going to be that. If you had been listening to us, I never understood why Fleck stood at the podium and talked to me at Big Ten Media Days about being delusional. This team was never meant to be the team that last year's was, that has 8-9 guys on 53-man rosters or practice squads. This is a team, because of the current structure of college football, that has to rebuild. They don't just reload. They had a freshman quarterback. Femi Ijeboy got way more carries than I ever saw coming. You're breaking in brand new receivers all season. The offensive line, my goodness, like the defense, it is what it is. Like, again, we've spent all year talking about it. But to still find a way to get to 7-5, I think you should find some joy in that, because the season was far from perfect. And you got obliterated on the road against Iowa, Oregon, Ohio State. We were here for all of it. You fell apart against Cal. You threw one to the backstop last week at Wrigley Field, where you scored 35 points, find ways to lose. But it's, you still found a way to get to 7-5 and 5-4. Like, if you want more, I agree with you. I want to cover more. And they have to do better in the portal. They can't be having all these misses, or at least not enough hits, whichever way you want to view it. They've also got to do, and I wrote about this afterwards, they have to do a better job next year of getting younger players ready to go sooner, like they did with Drake Lindsey this year. Like, Drake Lindsey was ready to go, and Greg Harbaugh should deserve a lot of credit for that. But you look at other positions around the team, and maybe why Minnesota didn't deviate from who they were playing is the younger players weren't ready. Now, some of that's on the players. Some of that's also on the coaching. And I look at this high school recruiting class that's going to sign on Wednesday, and I think it's among the best, if not the best, that Fleck has signed here at the University of Minnesota. Well, guess what? I don't see them freaking paper tigers on the field to see if they're worth a damn. So you've got younger players. And for what the portal is and what the portal you can afford from it, so much of this for next year has to be coming from within what you already have. So you have to do a better job of getting the redshirt freshmen, the true freshmen, the redshirt sophomores ready. But I almost reject the idea of a 7-5 season is a failure, which, again, I have done other podcasts where I'm sure when I record on Tuesday, one of them might say this is the worst 7-5 team that I've ever seen. Like, that's, I mean, it's not a lazy take to me, but I just reject the take, because it's hard to be 7-5. It's hard to win 5 Big Ten games. It's hard to be above 500 for the last 5 seasons in the Big Ten. So if you're struggling to find joy after seeing the Axe remain in Dinky Town for the fourth time in 5 years, or again, like I said, above 500 record, I'm not telling you to build the statue for Philip John Fleck, who on his 45th birthday yesterday surpassed Glenn Mason in the Gopher football win total here at the University of Minnesota. But if you want to see them go higher, so do I. Well, guess what? Dinky Town Athletes is going to need some more support. The Gophers have to hit on more evals. A lot of different things can be true. It wasn't a perfect season. It was another roller coaster season. Every game was an emotional vast pit, whether one way or another, where you didn't exactly feel good. This was about the first Big Ten game I can remember where you felt good, where Minnesota gets an early turnover, they take an early lead, and they essentially led the entire game. So I will now stand back from my pulpit from the Sunday sermon and say, I know it wasn't perfect, but if not perfect in this day and age is 7-5 and 5-4, like, I feel like we shouldn't be taking that for granted when you look around the rest of the Big Ten.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you get 12 opportunities to play, right? This year, Minnesota found 7 of those at home, 5 on the road. They're undefeated at home. Some just incredibly great experiences there. If you think back to, you know, the Coy Parrish interception against Purdue, you think about the Nebraska game. I felt good after that one. I don't know about you, Ryan. Maybe you didn't, but I did.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, that's second half. You felt pretty decent. Yeah.
Okay. Then there was Rutgers and that big comeback, and you know how loud it was in that specific game. There are lots of. There again, the point for me is there are 12 chances to win. I don't particularly care what people's record are. I like the mentality that Fleck has, where it's like we're trying to go 1-0 in this specific season, and you have to look at each game kind of individually, because we've talked about how the transitive property of wins does not translate in college football, in particularly. So you got to take the opportunities in front of you. There is disappointment in that they couldn't show up on the road ever, and sometimes they just weren't even competitive. That is frustrating. I get that. They found a way to win seven victories. I'll look back at that Cal game as frustrating. Cal also upset SMU yesterday. So it, at the end of the day, you got to take it how you see it. If you can't find joy in 7 victories, college football might be really frustrating for you going forward. And I'm not saying just as a Gopher fan, I'm saying as just a college football fan in general. And if you're going to say like, it's the playoff or bust, frankly speaking, you're also maybe not going to enjoy college football anymore. And frankly, this is kind of what the NFL is in some ways too. So I'll get off my soapbox, but Derek, what are your thoughts?
Couple things. Normally as fans, what we like to do at the end of the season, the off season, is talk about if we had only done this in this game and this in this game, we'd have a couple more wins. I don't think this is that type of year. I think last year, yep, you could definitely make a case for this, you know, last year's team being a 9-win team or certainly an 8-win team. If you look at some of the wins Minnesota had this year, you could certainly make a case that those turn into losses. So yes. I think 7-5 is 7-5. Second point would be in a year that didn't turn out the way a lot of people hoped it would, there were definitely some frustrating losses, some frustrating games. Even some of the wins didn't look like the way we wanted it to. So to have what some might consider a down year, now keep in mind Vegas over under I think was 6 or 6.5, to win 7 games in a somewhat down year, that's a pretty good sign. I mean, it didn't go the way I think Gopher fans want it to go all the time, but I think for a year that didn't turn out the way you wanted, to have 7 wins is a pretty good sign. And lastly, I would say, Ryan, I think you nailed it with getting younger players to play ready to play earlier. Welcome to college football in 2025. That is going to be the thing going forward. I mean, that is going to be a huge key for not just Minnesota, but for all of these teams. And so, again, I would just say, for Minnesota to be 7-5 against what we've talked about this a lot, the middle of the Big Ten is as good as it's ever been. There's more parity in teams, 5 through 18, than there ever has been. So for to come out with seven wins, and I think also a final point here, to have a couple of those maybe only couple really satisfying wins at home, I think that makes a difference with your fan base. To be able to beat Wisconsin at home and once again beat Nebraska at home in a fun game, I think that makes a difference, and I think that keeps your fan base healthy.
All right, so I think the thing that would make most sense is to talk about what's next. We'll have episodes coming out about this in the future. But Ryan, you know, bowl game next. The Gophers have seven wins. We're not going to be sweating a five win. Will they get in? Will they not get in? They're absolutely going to a bowl game. Dan Owen is the foremost expert at Gopher Illustrated. But maybe you can shed some light as into what you might expect and where they might go. Obviously, a lot has to happen, and it probably won't be for another week or two.
Yeah, we won't know officially until next Sunday, and I'm talking about, I think that's, what is that, December 6th, December 7th, that afternoon officially where they're going. I think word will start to reach my ears, potentially late Saturday night, early Sunday morning. We'll see what I say on Gopher Illustrated by then. But I also just want to take a shot at some of you where I love you guys, but if I get one more tweet that says I don't care about bowl game projections, this is worthless. Brother, just don't click on it. If it gets you so irritated that you even see it on your timeline, well, you got much bigger things to worry about in life. So a lot of people like to kind of see the ebb and flow of where Gopher projections could be and where they currently are. Is it a potential fruitful exercise? Man, it's good content because I think it gets everyone thinking, especially the way Dan Owen goes into it. Again, it's thousands upon thousands of words, and that's where when you look at it now, your Gopher is 7-5. Well, I think you can confidently say that probably Illinois and Iowa are going to be the two teams going to the Florida bowl games. Plus, you've got, I know that Luke's Washington Huskies are above them, plus USC, but they're going to be going to Pac-12s. Essentially, to me, the bowl games that Minnesota is going to be deciding between, or at least they're going to be put up against, are you're looking at places like Arizona again, which is the guaranteed rate bowl, but it's also Las Vegas, Music City, and the Pinstripe. Now, who are they competing against for that? You've got a 7-5 Nebraska team, a 6-6 Northwestern team, and a 6-6 Penn State team. And this is where I stand up at my pulpit one more time and say this. I want the Gopher administration to work with their head coach and not actually just be content in getting the guaranteed rate bowl. Not just be content in getting the pinstripe bowl. Why is it that Nebraska or Penn State gets to jump you in the bowl pecking order when this is my gripe, Luke, is this generation of Gopher fan, okay, they travel, especially if you give them a destination like, I don't know, Nashville, Tennessee that they haven't been to in 20 years, or Las Vegas around New Year's. You give them the opportunity to go to, I don't know, hypothetically, Boulder, Colorado, the Rose Bowl, Autzen Stadium. I've seen this generation of Gopher fan find the disposable income and go to a fun bowl game, go to a fun road game. So the stigma around Gopher football from these bowl executives in their head, I bet you still remains, well, Minnesota doesn't travel. They just don't travel. All Go Big Red does is they go travel. Yeah. Look, I can guarantee you if you kind of put Nebraska and Minnesota side by side in the last 5 years for road attendance of actual what road it is, look, it's a lot closer than you're going to think. Or even why is a Penn State team that as we record this on a Sunday morning who still doesn't have a coach and is likely to have hella opt-outs for the NFL draft, why should they pass you in the pecking order? Again, yeah. I feel pretty confident that a Northwestern team at this point, even with a head-to-head win over Minnesota, is going to be going to Detroit. Speak about a fan base that does not travel. I don't know how many Northwestern games I've been to, but the amount of Gopher fans compared to Northwestern fans in the city of Chicago, whether it's Evanston or Wrigley Field, like they're just that's a fan base that does not do much for them. So there are multiple options still on the table, and myself and Dan and I think even the Gophers are going to be trying to figure out what is their preferred order. If you ask me to guess today, I'd say they would prefer Vegas, number one. I would say they prefer Nashville number two, and then they would prefer Arizona before heading out to another baseball stadium and going and playing in the cold. That would be Yankee Stadium. But we will see where the tea leaves kind of fall there. But, Luke, I want to get your thoughts on, like, that is the thing I have heard, that two things. Bulls people think that the Gopher fans don't travel anymore, which please put this some respect on this generation of Gopher fan when you give them a generation. But also that maybe administration doesn't do a good enough job in actually fighting for what they want and just being content in getting a bowl game. Does that also make sense?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that this generation of Gopher fans definitely travels better, definitely shows up better. We kind of let off with that, and the fact that the student section has showed up really consistently all season. You can say maybe that's not the case, but I think the evidence is starting to overwhelmingly show that this Gopher fan base travels, and I think it will get better as time goes on. And then maybe just to kind of close things out too, we should talk quickly just about things that are coming down the pipe in terms of the transition that will happen in terms of coaching carousel. Maybe we'll reserve that for another date when the dust settles, because there's not a lot of news right now. Minnesota doesn't appear to be into it, and if they are, we'll obviously talk about it. But other than that, you think about the transfer portal, and NIL plays a big role in that. Derek, I know that this is usually a pretty busy time of year for you guys at Dinkytown Athletes. Is there anything that we as Gopher fans and those that listen to this podcast as Gopher diehards should know about?
This time of year is when we typically push for more support through the NIL Collective and Dinkytown Athletes. So look for a membership drive coming up. There have been a lot of changes to NIL, and if we had 10 podcasts, we wouldn't have enough time to go over the College Sports Commission and NIL Go and things that have been happening in the background since July 1st. But rest assured, we're on top of it. And the summary is this. There is definitely a concerted effort from the NCAA through the College Sports Commission and NIL Go to move away from booster, large booster donations or payments through NIL. So there are more rules around that. There's more regulation around that. But NIL is still protected for student athletes for valid business purposes, and memberships and a membership program is still a valid business purpose. So what does that mean? Ultimately, memberships have never been more important and never been more valuable, because the focus on membership and then also brand endorsements, like Ryan mentioned earlier in the podcast, for our players that we work hard to get, that's going to be where the focus is. So I would encourage anybody listening, and I know we have a lot of listeners who are already members and already support, and that's awesome. We've made a focus to add membership benefits to kind of beef up the membership program beyond just, you know, people that want to become a member to support the team, which is great. But we have, you know, raffles for things like tunnel team, field access, meet and greet with players, barbecue, kids clinics, all different. And this is across all different sports, not just football. So if you're listening and want, you know, think about how could you support or make a difference to impact the team that's put on the field next year, I would just ask that you consider becoming a member. And we have all different types of membership levels for different costs. It's very affordable at the ground level, and it scales up from there, and your benefits go up with each level. So appreciate the shout out. Give it a look if you would.
Yeah, and I'll just mention, if you have kids, being a member is definitely worthwhile with the clinics and those sorts of things. And the activities like the barbecue is an opportunity to interface directly with Gopher athletes. And you can make those kind of memories. I've probably told the story numerous times, but Dawson Garcia is my four-year-old's favorite basketball player of all time. He wears Detroit Pistons gear now, even though we haven't broken to him that Dawson's on the G League team. But the interactions that he had with Dawson were very meaningful. And I will say, it's amazing what impact these athletes and how good of good of people these athletes really can be. So you can get access by being a member. And I think that's just it's a phenomenal perk with young kids if you want to be able to create those life experiences. And then just lastly, Ryan, you are in the busy season of your job.
Is that right?
Peace and love to you, my friend. Thanks for coming on the podcast. We appreciate all the work you do here, and obviously what you have on Gopher Illustrated. So we hope you the best of health and the healthiest of mental states going forward.
Yeah, you got signing day coming up on Wednesday. You got the bowl game announcement coming next Sunday. But the beautiful part is, in theory, I get to take a little bit of a breath around Christmas, or right before Christmas, I should say, because the portal doesn't open until January. I'll be the first to tell you that Derek and the Gopher football staff are well underway in terms of attempting to retain many of Minnesota's players. I would also tell you, Luke, that Derek Burns is going to be coming on Gopher Illustrated to answer some questions.
Oh, no way.
From my lovely, lovely members.
So AMA.
A little AMA as best he can. Again, Derek's not going to be able to reveal to you everything, but especially in an alignment with this membership drive, I know there's going to be a lot more questions that listeners have about DTA, supporting DTA, and in an attempt to give Fleck as much ammo as, again, DTA can possibly give him come portal season, and it's also retention season. I'm very grateful that Derek has agreed to do that as well. So I will remind you one last time, through Cyber Monday, it's, I think, 75% off. It might switch to 50% off for a Gopher Illustrated membership. If you like what we've done all season, if you like the type of things I say on this podcast, or if you just want to come on there and yell at me in the Ask Ryan Burns thread, which now has over 37,000 replies and over 6 million views, which is insane to me, but I'm very appreciative.
All right.
Check it out, man. Again,
yeah, for sure.
It's been a long year, man. And we're appreciative of every one of our listeners that stuck with us to the very end. Lord knows it was an up and down season. We spoke about it every single Sunday, but you're going to miss my dulcet tones, aren't you, Luke?
Well, we're going to continue. We're not going to stop. We'll probably have some more. I do have some plans to get some more of those interesting conversations.
We'll do a signing day episode.
Yeah, we'll do a signing day episode.
Drew to come on the podcast here this week.
And then, Ryan, I haven't cleared this with you. I have a number of people that reply, and if we exceed the number, we're going to do a pizza party. You and I, and that doesn't mean we're paying for pizza. It means you come and we all have pizza together in Roseville here. So if you're in the Spotify comments on GI and you think you do it and you think you could make it, I can't specify the date. Ryan hasn't confirmed, but I have ways. If you reply and I get enough replies, we will have a pizza party here in either.
So do a little meet and greet with the fans over at the Roseville VFW.
We're gonna.
Can we get Derek Burns to show up so that he can we can finally be able to see face to face?
No,
share a hug,
not
rub stubble together.
Definitely not happening. But if we get enough replies of people that confirm yes, and we can make it worth the VFW's time, we'll do something either around signing day, you know, after signing day, or some sort of signing day specific content, or we'll just do an AMA of some kind. It was a frustrating season at times, but it was really, really fun as well. 7-5 is 7-5, but I will tell you, in this new era of college football, that is not bad. I am optimistic with a lot of the youth that they have on this team, and I'm optimistic because that's who I am by nature. So looking forward to breaking down the start of the 2026 season, which will be a bowl game. We'll have stuff all the way up until next summer when we kick off another season. So thank you again for listening, and go for it.
The last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.